Mathematical procedures. The most commonly applied decision rule and the default in most statistical packages, which sort of gives us a chicken and egg. Is it there because it's good, or is it common because it's the default? Is the eigenvalue greater than one rule? I want you to be able to explain the eigenvalue greater than one rule for two reasons. One, it is used a lot. It doesn't suck, so you're probably going to use it a lot. And so I want you to be able to explain the logic behind, not all the math, but the logic behind a procedure that you're going to rely on. Second reason that I want you to know it is it is one of the favorite trick questions in statistics. There's a couple of favorite trick questions. One of them is, what's the difference between a parametric and a non-parametric statistic? If you find yourself in a position of being a statistical consultant or expert or even just helping somebody, there's a couple of these things that they pull out of, well, let's not talk about where they pull them out of, and they drop them on the floor as if these would tell us your statistical acumen. That's one. Explain the eigenvalue greater than one rule. They just love to pull that one out. So I want you to be able to explain it. Imagine a spherical correlation matrix. That means each variable is independent of each other and carries unique information. So none of the variables are correlated with each other. You with me? No correlation at all. No overlap. Completely unique information from each. Pure sphericity. So each variable has 1/k of the information in R. Does that make sense? K independent things each have exactly 1/k of the information. For a normal correlation matrix, each variable on average has 1/k of the information. Make sense? So each has 1/k on average. So how good is your average variable? Your average variable carries about 1/k of the information. We're going to use that as a basis for decision. Part two, the trace of a matrix is the sum of its diagonal. So the trace of a correlation matrix with ones in the diagonal is K, the number of variables. Eigenvalue tells the amount of variance in R accounted for by each extracted PC. For a full PC solution, the sum of eigenvalues equals K, the number of variables. So the variables together add up to K, all of the variance, and each variable on average accounts for 1/k of the variance. Step three. PC is about data reduction and parsimony. Trading fewer, more complex things, PCs, which are linear combinations, for fewer, more simple things, the original variables. The question is, where's that point of parsimonic trade-off? That's a real word, by the way, parsimonic. How many do we keep so that we're getting more information for giving up a little bit of parsimony? Because each factor we keep, a little less parsimony, but a little more variance accounted for. Where's that trade-off? Where's that balancing point? So here we go. Any principal component with eigenvalue greater than 1 accounts for more variance than the average variable. So that principal component has parsimony. It's more complex, but it does better than any single variable on average. Any principal component with an eigenvalue less than 1 accounts for less variance than the average variable. And so it doesn't have parsimony. What it does for you is less than the average variable. That doesn't mean that a PC with an eigenvalue less than 1 is meaningless or stupid. It does mean it's got to be pretty cool to keep around, because it's an aggregate that accounts for less than the average single variable. But it could be really cool. You could learn something. It could be leftovers from other variables. Particularly when a PC with eigenvalue less than 1 is made up exclusively of multivocal variables. All variables that the main part of them loads somewhere else, and then there's something else hanging over. That's where you find really cool shit. That is, by the way, where test-taking speed came from. Because they had a whole bunch of different tests, and they sorted themselves out into verbal tests, performance tests, mathematical tests, and they couldn't quite get rid of this last variable. I'm sorry, this last factor, which tended to have a whole bunch of low positive weightings on it. What the heck could it be that almost that is in almost every variable, that's in almost every test, separates from the content and sits out by itself? And this happened for 12 or 13 years before somebody said, you know, that thing keeps showing up with an eigenvalue between 0.8 and 0.9. It doesn't suck. It doesn't pass the semi-magic rule, but it doesn't suck. And started saying, all right, what is it? So what do? Well, you go back in and you residualize. You take that factor out of all the other variables. And you look to see what's left over. And what turned out to be left over was test-taking speed. How quickly somebody can process the test. And it turns out that it loaded heavier on the mathematic and the performance items than on the reading. Because reading speed is part of reading more than reading speed is part of math or performance. Whole new construct. The notion of test-taking speed has had a very important role in standardized tests and achievement tests ever since. And what was it? It was a stray. It was a leftover. Didn't quite meet the rule, but showed up often enough that somebody got curious. There have been examinations of the accuracy of this criterion. The usual procedure is to generate a set of variables from a known number of factors. So what you do is you build the PCs and then you weight them and build variables. Then you factor those variables to see if eigenvalue greater than 1 leads to the correct number of factors. You know what the right answer is because that's what you started with. So you build factors, build variables out of them, factor them, see if you get the right answer. Results. This is a great example of you have to pay attention to what the words mean because it sounds good at first. The rule works pretty well on average. Let's take that apart. Which really means that it gets the number of factors right sometimes, underestimates sometimes, and overestimates sometimes. The only way you can be right on average is to screw up too many as often as you screw up too few. See the problem? It's not that it's right on average. If it were positively biased, that would actually be better. You with me? Because we know it keeps too many. If it were negatively biased, that'd be better. We know it keeps too few. That's why the statistical significance testing version works okay. We know it tends to be positively biased. We know it tends to keep too many. Because the test is so statistically powerful. It's easier to handle something that's biased than something that's inaccurate, except on average. The real problem is that nobody has generated an accurate rule for assessing when it's going to be right, when it's going to be an overestimate, and when it's going to be an underestimate. If we could do that, and actually we sort of can, but by the time you can look at your data set and figure out whether you're going to over or under factor with the eigenvalue greater than one rule, you're done factoring those variables and you've moved on to something else. But the rule is most accurate if you have less than 40 variables, if the number of factors is between, essentially this would be 8 and 13, and you have more than 300. Which is something like 85% of factorings. So it doesn't suck. It works well. But we know that sometimes it overs, sometimes it unders. So it's not going to be our magic solution.